Yeah, the Wednesday, the holiday edition of Mr. Irrelevant, presented by Door County Distillery. With you on ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Madison's YouTube channels, the ESPN Madison Facebook page, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Alex Strofe with you from the Gruber Law Offices. One Call, That's All Studios at the Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. You can get me on Twizzler, Twitter, X, at Alex_Strofe, Strouf, if you want to follow along that way. Joined, as always, by producer Tiny Hands. Hunter Vaughn is with me back at the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison ahead of 4th of July. Reminder, no show Friday, so we can enjoy the holiday weekend. If you really, really, really want to hear from me, which I assume you probably don't, but if you do, I'll be with you on Brewers warm-up beginning at 8 p.m. On Friday on 620 WTMJ, leading into that one for the crew. Get another win last night. We'll talk Brewers a little bit later as they acquire a pitcher earlier today. Hunter and I are going to have a very formal discussion and debate on fireworks with 4th of July coming up tomorrow. Also want to talk a little Packers on this quickie Wednesday edition of Mr. Irrelevant. Hunter, do you do anything for the 4th of July? Like, do you have a tradition? Do you go to the cabin? What do you do for the 4th of July, or do you have no plans at all?
I used to never make any plans, given that my mom works in healthcare, and then I always either worked in at a gas station or at a hardware store, and then working in radio. Like, I was just always having to work, and so was my family. So it was something that we never really did anything overly special other than maybe grilled or something. But my wife was always, no, we have to go back home to Racine. We have to go to the Racine fireworks. Like, that's just a part of my childhood. That's what we do. That's like our thing. So we were going to do that, but some plans had to change for that. So we're just going to be having some, I'm going to make some ribs in the slow cooker tomorrow, and just going to do that and hang out and celebrate America that way.
A little ribs in the slow cooker, celebrate America that way. It's well said, Hunter. I love that. Well, enjoy your ribs, man. I think I'm going to make some brats and have a few beers, go to Summerfest tomorrow. You know, weekend three, days 7 through 9 of Summerfest coming up tomorrow through Saturday. And Saturday we'll have our final Summerfest Saturday show from 12 to 2. It'll be me, Joshy DiMaggio, who's returning from Mexico. He's been in Mexico the last week and a half. He had a wedding down in Cabo, so he'll be back Saturday from 12 to 2. On 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee from 12 to 2 with me. Tony Cartagena, who's been on this show before, producer of Thanalysis, will join us as well. That will be our final day of Summerfest. Some interesting bands this weekend. Coin and Mountjoy tomorrow, who I'm looking forward to seeing. Bad Son's one of my favorite bands on Friday. How about Living Color? Cult of Personality, Hunter? I'm sure you know that song, Cult of Personality by Living Color.
Yeah.
They're there on Saturday.
Yep. Up until that point, I thought you were making up bands. I had never heard of any of those places, so, or people, not places.
That's fair. People, band, not places, bands. No, I like all those bands. They're all real. Neon Trees, you may also be familiar with.
Yeah.
They're there on Saturday night. I've seen them one other time at Summerfest. They actually put on a really fun show, so I'm going to see them again on Saturday. That will be the last band I see, my 9-day stretch of Summerfest that maybe we'll revisit a little bit next week, because it's been really fun. It's been a blast. I'll never do it again, though, the marathon. It's expensive. It's a lot. It's draining. But man, is it fun! If you're a fan of live music, we are so blessed, man, to have the what's dubbed the world's largest music festival in Summerfest right in our backyards here. I've walked to Summerfest every day from our Gruber Law Offices studios in downtown Milwaukee. I've walked from here to Summerfest all 9 days, and I will continue to do that this weekend, assuming there's no downpour on Friday when I make it out there. But man, we are so lucky to have such a wide variety of music right here, very easily accessible for those of you in Green Bay or Madison or Stevens Point or anywhere else in the state, La Crosse, Superior, whatever. Right, like it is right here. 9 days of great music. So grateful that I got to do this, but it has been draining, man. But looking forward to the final weekend starting tomorrow on the 4th of July. Let's talk Packers, though. We're less than 3 weeks away from training camp. And breaking news. Da-na-na, da-na-na. Very excited to tell you that on July 22nd, Mr. Irrelevant will be live from Green Bay for the opening day of training camp. More details to come on that, but we will be up in Green Bay, my hometown, for day one of the 2024 Green Bay Packers season. Rumor has it I may also attend the shareholders meeting as a non-shareholder that afternoon as well, so we'll see if that happens as well. We're working out the kinks on that one. But I will be in Green Bay for training camp on July 22nd. So I haven't been to training camp in like 3 years, believe it or not. Since I've been with ESPN Wisconsin, I've usually been back in the studio to help our coverage kick off. But this will be the first time I get to get out there for our coverage. So looking forward to that on Monday, July 22nd, less than 3 weeks away. Josh Jacobs, though, the brand new running back. And by the way, if you haven't listened yet to our State of the Packers show from ESPN Wisconsin last week, Jason Wilde, Gabe Neitzel, and myself live from Summerfest this past Saturday. You can catch some reruns of that coming up on Friday. I believe it'll air 9 to noon on ESPN Milwaukee and ESPN Madison in spot of Wilde and Tausch on the 5th. We covered a ton of ground. We talked about every position group. Really fun show. But specifically on the running backs, we talked about like Josh Jacobs and his implementation into this Matt LaFleur offense, but also Marshawn Lloyd and A.J. Dillon and you know, the running back position. But Josh Jacobs is such an intriguing piece to me because I know some Packers fans, rightfully so, are upset that the Packers moved on from Aaron Jones and got Josh Jacobs in free agency. I get why you're upset because Aaron Jones was kind of the heartbeat of the team, but I think we overvalue that, right? Like, this is professional sports. No one team is ever the same the following year, no matter what league you look at. Like, you don't have the entire cast of characters you had a year ago still around the next year, whether you're talking about the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, the MLB, MLS, college basketball, college football. One team is never the same the next year. So while a guy can be a great leader and a great asset from a leadership perspective and a friendliness perspective and a heartbeat of the locker room perspective, I think we overvalue that just a touch on how that will play a role in the 2024 Packers. Number one, Josh Jacobs was a captain. Like, he's known as a good leader. Number two, it is a bona fide and undeniable upgrade at the running back position to go from Aaron Jones to Josh Jacobs. So don't sweat it. This is a good thing. Josh Jacobs on the Insiders on NFL Network talking about the potential of the Green Bay Packers offense in 2024. And baby, let's get delusional. Let's get overexcited less than 3 weeks out from training camp. Here's what Jacobs had to say on the Insiders on NFL Network.
Matt LaFleur talking recently to the media saying philosophically he likes to have a couple of running backs because it's such a violent position for you guys to have to play for the course of the season. So he sees multiple guys being used in the backfield, but also said that he sees you as kind of a high volume type guy, a versatile guy. What's your impression with regard to how things are going to work for you in this offense in 2024?
Man, I honestly think the sky is the limit in this offense, man. You know, obviously with having a special guy in Jordan Love, you know, and having a good offensive line and, you know, some good receivers out there make it a lot easier for me. But just to be able to see the game plan and the things that they want me to do this year, the things that they're allowing me to do, I just think it's going to be a special year.
So give us a little more insight into that, Josh, because, you know, you go back to 2022, you put up over 2,000 yards for scrimmage, 12 touchdowns. Remember talking to you at the Super Bowl. Right after that, you get your opportunity to hit the free agent market. The Packers paid for that guy, what they saw on tape going back to 2022. Obviously, you had to battle through some injuries last year. When you talk about that, the things that they're going to allow you to do in this offense, what all does that entail?
Man, you know, just to be able to come out and actually show that, you know, I can catch the ball more, be able to run real routes, you know, not just that, but trusting me enough to be able to pick up protections. And, you know, it's just so special when you got a guy like Jordan Love back there, man, and you can't really just load the box every play and you make defenses decide, you know, what they want to stop. I think that's going to be the biggest help for me this year.
That Josh Jacobs with Mike Garofolo and Tom Pelissero on the Insiders on NFL Network. Some good insight into this offense and what Josh Jacobs expects in his first year. Now, two things caught my ear there. The very first thing he said, which you see on the screen right now, the sky is the limit in this offense. Let's look around the league and think about how the sky is the limit. Look at the Rams, look at the Niners, look at the Dolphins. When I say those three teams, Hunter, it's pretty easy. What do all three of those teams have in common the last few years? The Rams, the Niners, and the Dolphins.
Really versatile offenses.
Bingo, ding, 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 well done. And by the way, you could probably throw the Packers in there, but they've had some struggles with the transitional period from Rodgers to Love. But towards the end of last year, you saw that the sky is the limit. But those specific offenses are this coaching tree in Mike McDaniel in Miami, in Sean McVay with the Rams, in Kyle Shanahan with the Niners. Those are guys that came up in this league together, and they created and helped develop and evolve these offenses into what they can be. The other thing that caught my ear, though, there from Josh Jacobs is that he is ready to prove he can be more of a receiving threat in this offense, and then he called Jordan Love a really talented guy in the same breath. Now, number one, Jordan Love is very talented. We know that. He's going to get paid like it, too, in the next couple of weeks. But Josh Jacobs as a receiving threat just makes my mind explode as a Packers fan. Because think about the receiving threats you already have in this offense. Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Bo Melton, believe it or not, like I view him as a serious guy that could make a jump and be a legitimate threat. Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft. Hey, by the way, that guy they drafted in Marshawn Lloyd, not too shabby of a receiving back. And you add in a former first team all pro in Josh Jacobs to a list of receiving threats. Jordan Love's going to have a bazillion yards. And Matt LaFleur is going to scheme some really good things up for this offense. The third thing that I didn't mention that caught my ear from Jacobs is the compliment toward the offensive line. And something we've talked about many times, and if you've listened to the show since the get-go, the very first time Brian Bulaga appeared on the show, the former Packers right tackle and first-round draft pick, he talked about, and I asked him a question about it, and he just had a terrific answer on what makes the Packers so good at developing offensive linemen. And it just traditionally, they've been better than just about every team in the league when it comes to developing offensive linemen. And they've hit on those early round picks for the most part outside of like Derek Sherrod in 2011. But there were some other circumstances, right? He dealt with injuries. But think about a guy like David Bakhtiari, who was a mid-round pick and evolved into the best left tackle in the league. Think about a guy like Zach Tom now, who they view as one of their best offensive linemen. Elgton Jenkins has evolved into one of those pieces as well. So they constantly get these guys in the middle rounds and let them sit, let them learn, let them bask in the greatness of their coaching staff, and they evolve into these, you know, Swiss Army knife type offensive linemen. So this offensive line, despite some of the question marks we may have entering training camp, right? Who's the starting left tackle? Is Sean Ryan actually an everyday right guard? Is Josh Myers truly the best center, the best option you have at center on this roster? We have those questions, but if you roll out the five you had last year, Rasheed Walker, Elgton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Sean Ryan, who split time with John Runyon, and then at right tackle, Zach Tom once he returns from his pec injury, you're comfortable with that, especially when you have Jordan Love and Josh Jacobs and all those receiving options I just mentioned. This is an offense we expect to take the next step. And we expect to be that magic word I've used all offseason. Consistent. Because they weren't last year. Some of that blame goes on Matt LaFleur for cutting that playbook down to like a third of what it actually was. So it was easier to digest for some of those young skill position players and for a first-year starting quarterback. But as the season went on, and as this offense grew together, and as Jordan Love grew, we saw the potential this offense could have. Hunter saw it up close and personal in the wild card round. As this Packers offense, with some help from the defense, completely shredded the Dallas Cowboys, who were one of the best teams in the league last year. So this offense can be very, very good. Will it be very good? You certainly hope so. I think what we do know, though, is that the floor is much higher than maybe we expected 1 year ago at this time. Because you had all the questions around Love and the young pass catchers. But what you do know is Jordan Love is a capable NFL starter, at the very least. He's a middle-of-the-pack, capable NFL starter, at the very least. He can be an elite talent. This is going to be the year where we figure out what exactly Jordan Love's ceiling is. Last year was more about figuring out what the floor was. This year's figuring out, okay, what's the ceiling? I think Jordan Love definitely has the potential to raise what our expectations of his ceiling is. He can evolve into the Aaron Rodgers type of he can win you every game you play. And while progression is never guaranteed in the NFL, and there are other scenarios, right? Injuries exist, unfortunately. But you expect Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft to turn into more reliable options at the tight end position in year two. Mark Chamorro, who hosts the morning show on ESPN Milwaukee, Jen Gabe and Chewy, weekdays 7 to 9, has talked plenty about how tight end is the second hardest position to play as a rookie in the NFL behind quarterback, because there are so many things to learn, from blocking to receiving to routes to different things you help with in the run. There's a lot that goes into being a tight end. Think about just a small step forward for Luke Musgrave or Tucker Kraft. It's the best 1-2 punch the Packers have had at tight end since the 90s. When it comes to the receivers, and I saw earlier today, a quote from Jordan Love from a month ago has resurfaced on how not having a true number one receiver, he kind of views it as that offense's superpower. And while somebody will probably become the number one as we view it on paper this year, I don't know that you necessarily need it. I think you need it to win a Super Bowl, but I don't think Super Bowl is necessarily the expectation this year for the Packers. I think the expectation is win double-digit games, maybe get to an NFC Championship game. And shoot, if they exceed expectations, great. But I think that's the expectation. Be in the divisional round. Be in the same spot you were a year ago at the very least. And if you exceed expectations, great. I think this offense can be top 7 in the league. I think the 3 I named earlier are all in there. Miami, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Los Angeles, I still think, is a very, very good offense. As you saw Puka Nacua come on strong, and obviously Cooper Kupp is healthy. Matthew Stafford, when he's healthy, is still a very good quarterback in this league. And then you look across the league, right? Hunter's favorite team, Dallas, has a very good offense. I think, and then I haven't even mentioned AFC offenses yet, right? Kansas City is always going to be a threat. Cincinnati, if Burrow's healthy. Buffalo is always good. Baltimore's a good offense. And they add some pieces in the offseason. Philadelphia adds Saquon Barkley. Green Bay should be in that conversation. So I think this can be a top 7, if not better, offense in this league, because remember who the play caller is. Matt LaFleur is one of the best play callers in the National Football League, and that should not be something that's overlooked. Hunter, how do you feel? How good can this Packers offense be?
I mean, I think you're right. I think they should be top 10 in the NFL when it comes to offense, whether that's from a points perspective, production, third down efficiency, whatever way you want to measure what a good offense is, I think they will be consistently in the top 10 for all of that. I'm just wondering, like, what is the one thing, though, that could hold this offense back? Because I just keep thinking, if these receivers don't develop the way that we are expecting them to, this could be a really long season for Jordan Love, and a very frustrating one, too.
Yeah, so that's one part of it, and I think that's a good point. And look, I'm pessimistic sometimes during the season. This is the time where I tend not to be, but I'll take a look at the glass half empty thing for just a moment, because I think it is important. And it's a sentence I mentioned earlier that I kind of breezed right over. I brushed right over it. Progression isn't guaranteed in the NFL. Like, you expect it, but it's not guaranteed. It's a lot more difficult to win in the NFL than just saying, hey, everybody's going to be better and they're going to be awesome. Yes, the receivers obviously do play a big role. I would anticipate, Hunter, that one or two of them don't make the jump that we're saying. Because a lot of the topics we've been doing in this offseason, and I know across the board, right? Podcasts, articles, whatever you read, however you consume your Packers content, one of the big questions is, who's your guy, or who do you expect to be that next great receiver for the Packers, following the footsteps of Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson and Davante Adams? Who's kind of that next guy? Jaden Reed's kind of mine. Dontavian Wick's name has been thrown around. If Christian Watson can get a healthy 17, let's not forget about how great he can be. Bo Melton is another guy, right? Like, he's got speed. And obviously I'm not mentioning the most reliable receiver from a year ago in Romeo Doubs. One or two of those guys might not be as good as they were a year ago, and that's okay. But it's about those two other guys that maybe are much better than they were a year ago. So, and maybe they all do better than they did a year ago. And Jordan Love is more consistent and less sporadic than he was a year ago. I think that's something to keep an eye on. That's one thing. What if Jordan Love, you know, puts too much pressure on himself after becoming a $50+ million man and just doesn't look like the Jordan Love we saw at the end of last season? You know, maybe they stumble in the opener against Philly, and then when they play Indianapolis in week two, it's not as pretty as we expect, and they go to Tennessee and they lay an egg in week three, right? What if they start the season 1-2? All of a sudden you're going, whoa, this is not what we expected after coming off of the great run they had last year. Like, all of these things are realistic. They could happen. I don't expect them to, but they could, right? Maybe Jordan Love doesn't live up to the contract he signs this offseason. God forbid that happens. But could it? Yeah. Think about the quarterbacks in the league that have had a great coming out year, and then the following year, they just don't live up to the hype. I think of a name that did it last year, Jalen Hurts. Right? Jalen Hurts leads Philadelphia to a Super Bowl, and then he's kind of just middle of the road last year after leading them to the Super Bowl. Especially at the end of the season, turnovers and messy plays and the offense just, you know? They're all things that could happen. I just don't expect them to happen. I expect this offense to be really good and much more consistent, especially in the first half of the season, than they were a year ago. Curious on your thoughts, though. Feel free to chime in on the YouTube chat, ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Madison on YouTube, or shoot me a tweet if you're listening after the fact. I love, you know, reading your thoughts because, look, I can't predict the future. Neither can you. We're all projecting, and we're all just kind of curious. We're all Packers fans. We're all in this together. So I'm curious on your thoughts on it. Bite Me on the ESPN Madison YouTube chat says, they scored 50 points in three quarters on the road versus a top five defense last year. They should be by far the best offense in the NFL and a top five all-time offense. I'm guessing 30 points per game. So he's looking at the 30 points per game category. And let's remember, Matt LaFleur's offenses, his first few years, were in that category. 30 points per game in 19 and 20 when Aaron Rodgers was winning MVP awards. Love was consistently great in the second half of the season other than the Giants game and the second half of the Niners game. Yeah, he was. But is that guaranteed that it translates to this regular season? No. Should we expect it? Maybe. I mean, when you're signing him to that massive deal, you probably should expect him to look like he did against Kansas City and Detroit on Thanksgiving. And even Carolina, despite the defense not holding up their end of the bargain in that game, Joe Barry's defense collapsing against the worst team in the NFL. Jordan Love was really, really good at the second half of last season. He was the best quarterback in the league. But will he necessarily be that this year? I don't know. I hope so. I hope I'm wrong, Hunter.
Yeah, I just also wanted to address, because I've seen this brought up a lot when we talk about this Packers offense and going back to that Cowboys game. I think the thing Packer fans need to understand about that Cowboys defense was the fact that their numbers got inflated because of the special teams touchdowns that they forced. And the fact that they had some interceptions bounce into the hand of Deron Bland, and he has 40 yards of open field, so he's able to just walk in for touchdowns, that inflates what that defense was. They were very good, and they were a top half of the league defense all year, but they were terrible against the run. Even when teams were down on them, they knew they could still run the ball against them, and then they didn't have a lead. Green Bay was able to run the ball and establish things, and it was all over for them. So this idea that using that game as the exact example for what all of the year is going to be, I don't think is the best idea when you're talking about the expectations for the Packers, because there is a big asterisk for what that defense was.
Sure. I hear ya. But 50 points is 50 points.
I know.
No?
I know. I'm just trying to play a little bit of devil's advocate for this and just say there's other things I think about the offense and the way that they played late in the season to point to, and don't just hold on to what you saw in that playoff game against a team that has historically crapped the bed in the playoffs and say that that's the bar. That's what they should be every time. Like, I don't think that's the way you should be looking at it. Try it. Look at the other parts of what this team did throughout that late run in the season to get into the playoffs, the way that they played against the Bears and things like that as your indicator. The Cowboys game was great if you're a Packers fan. It's awesome. Don't use that, though, as the bar for what you want to see every single week, because I don't think that that's going to happen.
Well, yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And you know, hold on a minute. I've got somebody in my ear from Bristol. Okay, got it. Report from ESPN headquarters just says Hunter Vaughn a little bitter about the Cowboys' playoff success or lack thereof in recent years. Hunter, can you confirm that report?
Oh, I can absolutely confirm it. They've been garbage. It's been awful. Ever since the Tony Romo fumble, it's
sucked. The bed. A team that historically craps the bed.
They're so bad. As soon as the word playoff gets put on there, they're garbage. They had one good playoff game against the Seahawks, and then that's it.
David on the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube says, offense should, in air quotes, be top 10 in the league in offense next year. Easy. The two big things to look for are the two ones we've already talked about, but David's right. Injuries, number one, because you can never predict those, right? Like if two offensive linemen go down, uh-oh, watch out. The other one is love's consistency. And that is super important. Like we love to inflate, that's not the right word, but we love to really narrow in on the back half of the season when Love was very comfortable and looked awesome. And he did. And we can't take that away from him, but you also have to look at the first half of the season. It wasn't good. They were 2-5. Like, there's old episodes of Mr. Irrelevant that you can go back and listen to where I started the show by saying, I don't know if he's the guy. And ultimately, he proved me wrong. I think he's the guy. In fact, I know he's the guy. We could do this 3 years in a row without me questioning it. I'm pretty sure. Like, he could have a bad year, and I'd still say, hey, what we saw in 2023 was good enough for me to give him another chance. Kind of what the Giants are doing with Daniel Jones. And look, what Love did last year was better than what Jones has ever done. But what the Giants see in Daniel Jones is they locked him up, and they got to continue to trot him out there. So I would never be ready to give up on Love. But he had a bad first half of the year. Maybe bad's a little strong, but it wasn't anywhere near what he did in the second half. So if he can consistently do what he did in the second half, boom. This is a NFC North contending team. This is a probably a Super Bowl contending team. If he's as consistent as he was in the second half of last year. Actually, scratch that. They're not probably a Super Bowl contending team. They are. He's the best quarterback in football. If Love is an MVP candidate this year, they're a Super Bowl team. It's as simple as that. A lot relies on him. But to David's point, if he is consistent like he was outside of that Giants blunder and outside of the second half of the Niners game, they are a Super Bowl team this year. I'd be hard-pressed to find somebody to debate that. Like, it's Niners, Packers in the NFC Championship game again. And may the best man win. It's as simple as that in my head. All right. Holiday weekend's here, baby. You know how I'm celebrating? Door County Distillery. Locally produced, handcrafted, award-winning spirits made locally in beautiful Door County. Cherry vodka, cherry brandy, award-winning whiskeys. Ooh, I picked it up. I picked it up. Single malt whiskey, 27-time gold medal award winner. Picked it up. Can't wait. Can't wait to indulge. And maybe we'll get creative with it. You can check out DoorCountyDistillery.com for a unique list of cocktail recipes. Man, some of them are really fun and summery, and that list is awesome. You got to check it out if you haven't already. DoorCountyDistillery.com or scan the QR code on your TV or computer. And also check out DoorCountyDistillery.com, retailer nearest you. You can pick it up, elevate your party, elevate your gathering, elevate your tailgate, whatever you got going on this weekend. Door County Distillery does the best. They're local. Support local, man. Do it right. Support local. DoorCountyDistillery.com. 60-second break. When we come back, we talk a little Brewers. We talk a little July 4th. We wrap up the week and the show with what we learn. That's all next in 60 seconds. It's Mr. Relevant. I'm Alex Strofe. I'm back at the great Door County Distillery here in Carlsbad with my friend Rob from Door County Distillery. We're making, it seems like a summer drink here, Rob, a cherry Cosmo.
Exactly. Just our twist on a regular Cosmo. Obviously Door County, so have to stick some cherry into it.
Have to stick some cherry into it with the cherry vodka from Door County Distillery made with local cherries, right?
Yep. Made with the Montmorency cherries we're known for here in Door County.
I love it. Let's get to it. What do we got to do?
All right. So first, obviously the cherry vodka. We're going to add 3 ounces of that. Next, we'll go to triple sec. 1 ounce of that.
Need it for a Cosmo.
This is actually just cranberry juice. 1 ounce of that. 1/2 ounce of the lime.
The Boston shake, I've learned.
Make sure it's, yep, ready to go.
That's such a cool little trick.
Shake it up. Shake it till you feel like it's shaking while we're on. Strainer.
I like that color. That looks like summer. Cherry Cosmo from Door County Distillery. Cheers, Rob.
Cheers.
Tastes like summer to me.
Visit DoorCountyDistillery.com to find the retailer nearest you, as well as a huge list of unique cocktail recipes. That's DoorCountyDistillery.com. DoorCountyDistillery.com. So David's coming back at me real quick on the Packers. He says, careful in saying that about the Super Bowl, Strofe, when we haven't seen the defense on the field yet. It's a good point. It's a good point. However, I'll say this. If Jordan Love is the best quarterback in football, I don't think it really matters, unless the Packers are the worst defense in football. I don't think it really matters. Because if we think back to like great Packers runs, defenses typically stepped it up at the end of the year. As much hate as we give Joe Barry, that guy always had his best performances, or his defenses did, when his back was up against the wall. When everybody was trashing him, they usually had a couple good games in them. Dallas is one of them. That Dallas playoff game is a really good example of it. That Carolina was a blunder. But then Minnesota, he was playing a third-string quarterback, so I don't know how much credit we can give him for that one. But then Chicago in a do-or-die game. And then Dallas, like, those defenses were pretty good. And they weren't half bad against San Francisco either. So, I mean, if the defense isn't entirely incompetent, I think I stand by what I said. If Love is the best quarterback in football, they're a Super Bowl team. I don't think that's an outrageous take.
Yeah, Hunter? If the defense, let's say, is even average or slightly below average, but Jordan Love is the best quarterback then in the NFL, I think you look at, down at the college football level, it's going to be like that TCU team that made the playoffs. They're going to score a billion points. They just can't stop anybody. And at least then for Packer fans, you get to have a bunch of fun because you're going to be hearing, you're going to see a bunch of Lambeau leaps. It's going to be a bunch of points scored, and you can just have a good time. Like, that's worst case scenario, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Bunch of Lambeau leaps. That's something I haven't thought about in a minute, is the Lambeau leap. I guess that's how numb I am to the football offseason. I just completely forget about the great traditions. Haven't forgotten about you, Jump Around. Haven't forgotten about you. All right, let's go to our new favorite segment, Wisconsin's Dad. I have not heard this one yet. Brewers get a big win last night in Colorado. They come back late. It was back and forth. I fell asleep. I'm not going to lie to you. I fell asleep on the couch last night. They win 4-3 over the Rockies. And Dallas Keuchel gets a win in his second start. And hey, look, that's one of those. And we'll talk about the trade they made today. But they get a win with Dallas Keuchel. I don't think he's technically credited with the win, but he started the game. And they ultimately win. He pitches over five innings. Only allows four hits. I think that's kind of what you expect. Right, he's not the Cy Young version of Dallas Keuchel anymore. So when you throw him out there occasionally, just like hope for damage control, I guess. And that's kind of what you got with him last night. And the Brewers are able to get the win. And they technically won, is my understanding, Hunter, on a hit by pitch, right? Reese Hoskins, if I'm not mistaken, was hit by a pitch.
Yep.
With the bases loaded, and that was the go-ahead run in the ninth.
Yep, took a 94-mile-an-hour fastball. Hung in there.
Ooh.
Yeah, like a champ.
That feels good. So I never played baseball at a high level, so I'm never getting a 94-mile-per-hour pitch thrown at me. I did ump baseball. So when I was in college, I umpired baseball for, I think it was two or three summers. I'm in a small little town called Maribel, Wisconsin, just south of Denmark, north of Manitowoc. And I just did it like once or twice a week, and it was typically like seventh, eighth, or like kids going into eighth or ninth grade. So like about freshmen, like 13, 14, 15 year olds. And, I was often, actually almost always, the home plate umpire. So I was calling balls and strikes. Let me be the first to say, if anybody's watching, that maybe I umped your kid, or maybe the kids are watching that I umped. I apologize. I wasn't very good. I understand that. I just needed a couple bucks when I was in college. Now, the worst one I ever got was, I'm going to have to stand. And I don't even know if you'll be able to see me. I'll move these monitors for you if you're watching on the video side. So, I'm hunched over, right? Watching the balls and the strikes. Foul tip. And I was pretty guarded up, right? Like, I was wearing shin guards up to the knees. I obviously had a chest pad on and a mask on. So my only exposed areas essentially were my arms and then my thighs. Foul tip took one right off the right thigh here, and I had the biggest purple bruise I've ever had in my life. And, you know, it was a foul tip into my thigh, and you could probably hear the thud because the crowd went, ooh, ooh. And, you know, I don't think the catcher realized what happened. So I grabbed him, you know, by his gear, and I kind of pulled him up to his feet, and I said, walk with me, walk with me. So him and I take a walk to the mound, and, you know, whatever, you know, I'm a champ, I'm a tough guy. We go back to the plate, we finish the game, I start stripping the gear off. And I think I was wearing sweatpants, so I just like slid him down in like the little umpire closet. And I looked, and it was already like yellow. It was nasty, and I had that bruise for several weeks. That's the worst bruise I've ever had. So anyway, my point here is a 94. Would you say 94 mile per hour, Hunter?
Yep.
A fastball.
94.
Wouldn't feel good. Would not feel good because I probably took like a foul tip that was maybe 50. Miles per hour? I mean, it was close on the ricochet, but yeah, that didn't feel good. So Rhys Hoskins, anyway, back to the story. Rhys Hoskins, hit by pitch, scores the go-ahead run. Brewers, you know, don't allow anything in the bottom of the ninth out in Colorado. They get a win. 4-3. Now, Pat Murphy, like I said, I have not heard this yet. I'm letting Hunter take the lead on watching Wisconsin's dad and what he says. Pat Murphy talking about how they won the game, correct, Hunter? Am I setting this up correctly?
Yep.
If you want to set it up, feel free.
Yeah, so he's talking about how the team was able to win the game and just what they were able to do offensively, and then this was him on Bally Sports after the game.
And, you know, we left some guys on base. We didn't really get the big hit offensively when we needed to, but, you know, Rhys Hoskins hanging in there, down 0-2, and then, you know, Monasterio, Mitchell's at bat, drawing that walk. I mean, that's baseball, man. That's how you play offense. So, yeah, we didn't get the big hit, but we pecked away like, you know, like little woodpeckers.
We pecked away like little woodpeckers.
I like that from Pat. Little woodpeckers. So he's buying recipes from Martha Stewart. He's not on Twizzler much. And he's pecking away like a little woodpecker. God. You could see, too, in that video, if you were watching the video stream, he had that little smirk right before he said it. He's got that, like, signature Pat Murphy smirk where he knows he's about to say something that people are going to like. Pecked away like little woodpeckers. I love that from the manager, Pat Murphy. What a dork. I love that. Another low-risk, high-reward move, by the way, for the Brewers, like they did with Dallas Keuchel a few weeks ago. They trade for Rays pitcher Aaron Civale from the Rays. They trade their 20th, I think it was, prospect. I don't know who he was. Look, and why I call it low-risk, high-reward, because Dallas Keuchel, we just recently learned within the last few days, the for cash considerations, $1 is all it took to get Dallas Keuchel. Now, to get Aaron Civale, who was pitching in the big leagues, not very good this year, but still in the big leagues, only 29 years old, started his career with the Cleveland Guardians from 19 to 23, and then last year and this year he was with the Rays. Now with the Brewers, we assume he'll pitch within the next few days for the Brewers. He'll make his Brewers debut and become pitcher number 167 to start a game for the Brewers this year, seemingly. I would guess when the road trip continues in LA, probably. I would guess probably Friday or Saturday, maybe, if he does end up getting a start. He's not projected in there yet, but I would imagine that might change. We'll see with that. But look, it's low risk, high reward. They need arms. The injury bug keeps hitting them. I don't mind this move, right? This is not the big swing that we anticipate they will probably take sometime this month with the trade deadline coming up on July 30th. But as Pat Murphy just said, this is a team that continues to find different ways to win games. Like, they're just finding ways to win. And last night, another weird one, a hit by pitch ultimately gives them the win in Colorado. Thumbs up. Great. The go get Aaron Civale. We'll see if he's got some good innings left. And again, like, they've traded for pitchers in the past that have come in and kind of had a rejuvenation of sorts. Like, a change of scenery is good for them as they join a winning ball club, and ultimately it helps them kind of trip upon a postseason trip. Like Gio Gonzalez is a name that comes to mind, who that happened with a few years back. So I like the move. That's that. It's just not a huge swing. So be it, right? Like the Brewers are finding ways to win. It is what it is.
Yeah, and Savali's the guy that, like, right now I think he's sitting at like a 5.1 ERA. Like, if the Brewers do what they normally, but if they do what they have normally done with pitchers, sure, they get that down by a run. With the way that this offense has been, you got a starting pitcher that's averaging a 4 ERA, you're looking good. And as long as he can just eat up innings for this bullpen and they can stay in games, you're fine. Because I think he's kind of sitting at a, what would be the probably maybe 3-4 pitcher of a 5-pitcher rotation for them. Like, you're fine with that. So I think this is a great move. I'd like to see them make another big move and go try and get an ace. But if this is all they do, I think it's fine. They're going to have to give somebody up, whether that's high-level prospects or somebody from this starting outfield or from their out in the field, and go get a big name, because they need somebody else to carry the bullpen if they really – or carry the rotation if they really feel like they're going to make a deep run this year.
Yeah. I, what would you define a deep run as? Like, is that the divisional series?
Yeah.
A deep run?
Yeah, I think you absolutely win the wild card, and I think you're – getting that 5 games. Yeah, you're getting late into a series in the divisional round, given how good both the Phillies and the Dodgers are. I think that's a fair expectation for this team. I don't expect them to be NLCS this year. I'd love to see it. And I think they are capable, but at the same time, like, I understand what they're going up against. And when you have Shohei Ohtani just putting up one of the best months ever that an LA Dodger has ever had, like, that's going to be hard to try and get past, which right now it's looking like would be their second round, that divisional round matchup.
Yeah, and they have not had luck with the Dodgers in the past, but when you got the payroll like they do, man, they better be in those spots and winning in those spots. I'm speaking for the Dodgers, but you never know what happens. You saw what happened last year with the Rangers, so we'll see. I threw a poll out ahead of July 4th on Twitter, at Alex_Strof, STROUF. Which word best describes your feelings toward fireworks? Love, fine, meh, or anti? I was intrigued by the results. love and anti, both at 18.5%. Fine and meh, combine them, we're at about 65% of the vote. So that's kind of where I land. I'm not anti-fireworks. They're just kind of whatever. Like, they did them at the opening day of Summerfest, and they were cool, right? They were done by professionals. They looked sick. They were big, explosive, badass. Like, they look cool. That was fun. It was a fun little, like, in-between concert, stop and glare, have a beer, and watch the fireworks type thing. Now, the issue I have with fireworks is when people pretend they're professionals and they spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to light them up in the neighborhood, and then it just doesn't look that great. Hunter, though, my understanding is you are like a big fan of fireworks. Is that an accurate depiction of your feeling toward fireworks?
Yeah, I love fireworks. I'm not one of those people that like thinks I'm a professional and I'm going to spend a bunch of money on them. I think that's just absurd. But when I go places, like, yes, I love them. I loved going as a kid to Rhythm and Boom down here in Madison and staring up at the sky as it lights up with all of the fireworks. Think about the scene from Sandlot, where they talk about it was the only night game they played because it would light up with the fireworks. It's a moment to think about, okay, it is America's birthday. I'm going to have some fun, and I'm going to watch these fireworks and just feel like a kid again. They're great, and I don't get all of this. It's like the cool thing now this time of year is like, oh, fireworks are lame. They're stupid, even though up until one person decided to say it, everybody else was like, yeah, they're fun, they're cool, I enjoy this. But oh, no, one person said it who somebody else thought was cool, and now everybody else has to jump on the hating on fireworks. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's un-American. I'm not like super anti. Will you light fireworks, Hunter? Like, will you light some off this year?
No. I let professionals do that. Like, if you're lighting them off in a residential, like, I don't know who lives around me. I live in an apartment complex too. Like, I don't know if there's veterans. I know people have dogs. Like, I had a friend whose parent was a veteran, and I saw what that was like for them. So no, I leave it up to professionals. So you know, like, okay, there's fireworks happening in this area, and you know it's a designated spot. I don't like the I'm just in the middle of a cul-de-sac and some a-hole is lighting off $500 worth of fireworks for the next 3 hours. That's weird, and I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Can't blame me for that. Yeah, that's fine. If you do light them off, be safe. Don't blow your hand off, right? We don't need what happened to you, what happened to a former NFL defensive end. Don't need that. The 4th of July and fireworks, though, did birth one of the greatest memes in internet history. And I wish I would have told you to play it. This is on me, Hunter. But you know, back it up, Terry. Back it up, Terry. You know that meme?
I don't.
You know what I'm talking about? Okay, well, that's too bad. Maybe we'll play it next week. We'll make that a tease. If you have free time, though, go on YouTube, look up Back It Up, Terry. You will get a good laugh out of that. Time now for What We Learned. It is our final show of the week. We will be back with you on Monday, which means we'll only be 2 weeks away from training camp. Holy smokes, the summer flying by. Hunter, what'd you learn?
I learned that when you have even just one additional person like coming over for a meal, it's way too stressful. Like trying to figure out like, okay, what are we going to have? Are they bringing something? How do you ask somebody to like potentially bring something? Like, and it's just my sister-in-law coming over. But like I said, we're making ribs, and it was just like this whole thing of like, okay, do we want ribs? Do you want to do pulled pork? Do we just want to do burgers? Like, what do we want to do? What are we going to have with it? Who's going to pick up what? It's too much. I don't like it. And I've realized that I just don't like that part of it. I have no problem cooking.
So you don't like hosting? You don't like hosting.
No, I would honestly, I think what I want is I just want my wife to just tell me. I want Sarah to just be like, hey, we're going to have this. She's coming over at this time. Have it ready. Does this sound good? And just leave it at that. Instead of me having to be involved, because like, I don't care. Like, it's the 4th of July. I just want to eat some meat and maybe watch like The Patriot and feel like a good red-blooded American. That's all I want to do. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of hosting and making decisions.
There you go. Fair enough. What I learned in NBA news, LeBron James signs a 2-year, 1-on-1 deal, essentially, with the LA Lakers, worth $104 million. However, LeBron gets a no-trade clause now, and I didn't realize only one other player in the league has a no-trade clause, and that is Bradley Beal, of all people. Essentially, the no-trade clause in the NBA means the player can veto trades. You can say, yeah, no, I don't want to go there. And for LeBron, who's now going to be playing with his son, they will be the first father-son duo in NBA history to play on the same team together. They will play together, right? Like, LeBron's not going anywhere. So that's pretty awesome. But LeBron, what we also learned from this, I think, is he is near the end. I would guess maybe one or two more years of LeBron James, which is sad, right? Because we've seen the quarterback era kind of come to an end. Rodgers, like, the last one hanging on, and Stafford, too, I guess you could throw in there, of the last era of quarterbacks. In the NBA, like, you've got Chris Paul, who just signed with the Spurs. You've got LeBron, and that's about it. I mean, if you want to throw Paul George, who just signed with the Sixers in there, he's a little bit after that era. But we're coming to an end of an era, which is sad. But LeBron and Bronny together is really, really fun. And I saw in a sports book this week that one of the big sports books nationwide, is offering a plus, I believe, 1,500 line already on Bronny James if he scores 25 or more points in any game this NBA season. I don't know that it will happen, but that's interesting value for a guy that might get some playing time for the LA Lakers. So there you go. LeBron's new contract. The only one of two players in the NBA to have a no trade clause. That does it for us this week. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Good chats on the Brewers and the Packers and everything else we chatted about all this week. We had Doug Gottlieb on the show on Monday. If you missed that conversation, you can find it on the podcast feed or on the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channel just for the isolated interview. We're back with you Monday. Have a safe holiday. Enjoy your holiday. Spend some time with people you love. Tell them you love them. Enjoy some Door County Distillery. Have a few drinks. You're going to be at Summerfest. Enjoy it. I'll be there all 3 days, but I will be there for ESPN Milwaukee on Saturday, Summerfest Saturday, with Tony Cartagena and Josh DiMaggio from noon to two. If you're looking for some local radio fix on Saturday, if you're driving around running errands, you can tune into us on there as well. Back with you Monday beginning at 12:30 on the ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Madison YouTube pages, and wherever you get your podcast. We will talk to you then. Have a great long weekend. It's Mr. Relevant. I'm Alex Schroff. Peace.